Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Brought to you by Baptist Health and by Everbank. Jaguars Thursday begins right now. Right now.
From the HananiahAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman, Tony Baselli, right after the Dave Caldwell Show. Fill in for Gus Bradley tonight. Did a fine job. Glad you're with us. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Reaction to the general manager's comments and much, much more ahead. An update on the offensive coordinator search. We'll throw around some of those names that have been reported and see what some of the early names have to offer. I have a feeling, guys, it's a little bit of ways from being complete, that coordinator
search. Well, and I think the one reason why that it's not going to happen quickly, I mean, there are some offensive coordinator candidates that are waiting to see who gets head jobs elsewhere because, I mean, there's some of those guys have very good friends in the business. You know, and what better job would you rather have than to work with a friend? Number two, also, length of contract, as we talked about with the general manager, Dave Caldwell, about security in that contract.
Yeah.
And some candidates that are offensive coordinator right now are potential head coaching candidates, Doug Marrone being an example of that. So the head coaching kind of lineup has to fall first, I think, before a lot of the other ones do, unless you're going into a relatively unknown entity.
You still have to do interviews now, just in case, because you can't bet on the fact that, you know, a few weeks from now that the guy that you might – be targeting might be available.
Well,
so you
not
have to
that,
some of this stuff.
You know, some of the guys you might be targeting are on staffs that are in the playoffs.
That's right.
And so there might be a guy who's been a coordinator in the past and is a line coach or a quarterback coach or whatever position coach, and you got to wait to find out what their situation is going to be and whether they're available or not. I mean, a guy that comes to mind is Tom Cable, the offensive line coach at Seattle. Who's been a head coach.
What is his title in Seattle anyway?
I'm not sure. All I know is that he might be assistant head coach. I know he's the line coach, and he is an outstanding line coach, one of the best in the NFL, great run coordinator, and is a guy who's led an organization as the head coach, and I'm sure his first choice is probably to be a head coach.
He's assistant head coach offensive line.
So you might not be able to even.
Yeah, so I don't know if you go from that position to an offensive coordinator, is that really considered an elevation?
I'm not sure.
You know, and do the Seahawks, would they even have to say.
Would they even give them permission?
Yeah.
Right.
Would they even have to?
Right. So that's just, you throw out names like that. I mean, who knows? I mean, I think it's going to be a wide net. And Gus has basically said they're going to take their time and cast the net pretty wide and find out the best guy for the situation.
You know, it's interesting. We've talked about it on Jaguars.com throughout this week with John Osier and such that, you know, it's not necessarily going to be what he calls a quarterback whisper. I mean, this could be a run-oriented type of offense too, right? You're not stuck to just finding a guy that's going to throw the ball.
I don't think it's about finding a guy that can throw the ball. Right. I think it's more of overall scheme. And the offensive coordinator doesn't have to be the quarterback guru.
That's right.
I think Frank Selfo is an excellent quarterback.
And that's what
coach.
Dave was just talking about a second ago.
Yeah. So I don't think that's, you know, obviously if an offensive coordinator that you really want has a desire to bring maybe his own guy in, maybe that happens. I don't know. I mean, that's up to Gus and the conversations that Gus might have with the offensive coordinator. So that's kind of remains to be seen. But – I think Frank Selfo is an excellent coach. I certainly love talking to Frank. He's got a great personality for this game because, I mean, this game is high stress, and it's a very pressure-packed business. And Frank has the ability to kind of to make it relaxing and make it fun. And I think that's very important in a coach that can make it fun.
But it's going to be interesting. And, you know, whoever they hire as an offensive coordinator, and he might come in as offensive coordinator and says he likes the staff just how it is. Or he might be a guy who has a couple assistants that he wants to bring with him because they believe in the same philosophy and know what he's
want to help teach his system.
And teach his system. And so I think it could be just one position and no change, or it could be a lot of change. And I think that's what we'll find out over the next couple weeks.
You never really had change in offensive coordinator, did you?
There was Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, we had.
Well, not really. I mean, Coughlin.
It was Tom's offense. It was Tom and Kevin basically had the same philosophy. And then Gilbright left. He got a head job. And
Chris Palmer
came in. And then he left for a head job. And then Tom was the offensive coordinator by title 1 year with Bob Petrino as the quarterback coach. And the following year, he made Bob Petrino the offensive coordinator. And so Tom has gone through – I mean, we had different guys as the coordinator, but it was the same exact language, system. Nothing changed for me in the 7 years I was here.
Now, there's a lot of people that have asked me since Jed Fish was let go, you know, how much of an impact does another system have on a young quarterback
right.
like Blake Bortles?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it makes an impact. But I think the most important thing for a rookie is to get the exposure, especially the quarterback, is to get the exposure of understanding what's on the other side of the ball and to understand what it's like to go against NFL defenses. Yes, it will. It could slow down his progress somewhat because if it has completely new terminology and everything else. But at the end of the day, understanding NFL defenses is the most critical thing. A lot of the concepts from one coordinator to another are very similar. It's just a percentage or mix that some of them may have. So, to me, I say, you know, in answer to those questions, yes, it will have an impact, but the most important thing that Blake Bortles got was the exposure of being on the field for this season. And that is more important than worrying about the coordinator change.
Well, yeah, it's going to have an impact. The level of impact will be determined on who they bring in and how much different it is. I mean, there's been coordinators that have come in situations where they find out what the language was that was used and adapt that language to their system. And so it's a different system, but similar language, so the learning curve's a little bit easier. Other coordinators are going to come in and say, this is my system, and this is the language, and it'll take Blake and everybody else to relearn the language that this system uses. So the impact's going to be there. How big it's going to be, it's going to be yet to be determined.
And from the way I understand it, they can get a playbook. There just can't be too much discussion about the playbook, right?
I don't know all the particulars of that. They can get a playbook, but the conversations, I don't know. You know, let's say that you get a new coordinator. Can he talk on the phone with Blake Bortles about the playbook? Can he send an email back and forth with Blake Bortles? I don't know exactly what the CBA says you can and can't do.
I don't know
that the classroom stuff is off limits.
I don't know what the rule is, but I do know what the rule is on free agency, and they all break it when they contact free agents. And obviously Dave's going to say that never happens. But I think
how about a couple years ago when Peyton Manning was off visiting Nick Saban at Alabama with his offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think Jeff and I probably would both agree that a lot of those rules are maybe not broken, but bent pretty severely. And so who knows really what will happen. I'm sure the Jaguars follow the letter of the law, but
absolutely.
I'll just say this, my guess is there's other organizations that find a way to skirt around and walk in the gray area.
Not the Jaguars.
Not us.
No, not at all. Not at all. Offensive line. You know, we've heard Dave say it before about he likes the center and the right guard and the left tackle, and Beatles got better at left guard as it went on, but Gus is saying, yeah, we're going to stick with the zone scheme. That's the personnel you have. That's going to happen no matter who the coordinator is, right? I mean, you agree with that, right? Stick with the zone scheme?
Well, listen.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm a zone guy. That's what I believe in. I think that's the best system to run, and I like that system. Even though you're a zone team, you're still going to have gap concepts in, which is power and stuff like that, a counter or whatever you want to call it. So you're going to have gap concepts in, but you have to determine what your identity is going to be and what your foundation is going to be. I like the zone. There's other people that like more downhill gap style running as their foundation, and then they do some zone schemes off that. I think depending on who the coordinator is, because I think it's hard, I would think it's hard at least to hire a coordinator who is a gap guy, a gap personnel. That's what he believes. That's his conviction. While he understands zone and there's going to be zone concepts as well, to come in and say, we want all zone is our foundation, with gap principles as kind of an offshoot. I think they'd like to stay zone. I'm not saying they're not, but heck, we've heard Gus say that when he hires an offensive coordinator, he's going to give them a lot of leeway in, as far as what staff they want. So I got to believe he's hiring that individual because he believes in what that individual can do and teach and what their convictions are. And so it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
What do you think of all that, Logs? Offensive line, where is it?
Well, I mean, it's an offensive line that has the ability to move. You know, Jokel, Linder, Bowanko are all guys that can flow. And when I say flow, I'm talking about run, get the second level, and that's typically the guys on a zone blocking scheme. They're not like the old Baltimore Ravens used to be, you know, 340 pounds across the board and going to push you off the ball and pound you with a fullback. That's not the style of play the offensive lineman that you have. So I think it is important to stick with what you have been drafting players for that fit. So I don't think that that's going to change. And obviously every team in the National Football League is not exclusively zone or exclusively gap. It's a percentage mix. What are they more like? Well, the Jaguars are going to be clearly more like the zone scheme. And is it difficult to find, or are certain coaches not qualified as coordinators to not run the zone scheme? No, I think good coordinators can run any scheme. To me, the most important thing is about the passing game and the passing concepts and then the complementary runs off of that. Because, I mean, let's face it, the league is a passing game. And so you've got to be able to throw the football and be able to throw the ball effectively to win in this league.
Jeff, I mean, I agree overall, but the best team, or arguably the best team in the NFL, would disagree with you because that's not what they are. The Seattle Seahawks are a run-first power football.
So rare, though.
I agree, but
I mean,
I'm just
you look
saying,
at every other team that there is.
The Panthers are like that.
Are
they're in the playoffs.
First.
The Dallas Cowboys this year are run first. That's what their success is.
Patriots.
Well,
the Packers,
there's eight teams
the Colts,
left.
The Broncos.
There's eight teams left. Three of them were some of the best running teams in the NFL.
And it'll be interesting to see kind of how this plays out because, I mean, Tony brings up a good point. You got three, and then you got five. Three teams that are kind of run first, and five that are, we're going to throw the ball around the yard a little bit. And the three that are run first probably do so because their quarterbacks aren't as good as the other five.
Except for Romo. Romo's a heck of a quarterback. He's one of the highest-rated quarterbacks in the history of the league.
I'm not buying it.
Uh-oh. Really?
I'm not buying Tony Romo as being a great elite quarterback. I mean, his numbers, when you look at his regular season, fantastic. I'm not arguing that the numbers are not elite. I'm not doing that. But I'm talking about an elite quarterback that you can take a team and put it on his shoulders and he can carry him to victory and win in the playoffs. Tony Romo has not proven it
he's
yet.
Pulling the big game card out.
And I disagree with that. I think Tony Romo is, you know, is he Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers? No, but he's a very close to that group. He is an elite quarterback because if you look at what he's done and able to do on average teams, it's been pretty nice. Has he been great in the playoffs at times? No, but, you know, Peyton Manning, if you want to really look at records of playoff effectiveness, you could outside, you know, he made two Super Bowl runs, but you could make a lot of comments that, or three Super Bowl runs now. He's won one and lost two. But there's times that people look at Peyton Manning's numbers in the playoffs and you question what he's done. No, I think Peyton Manning's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I think it's dangerous just to look at the playoffs, and that's what we've done over the last 10 to 15 years. We've boiled everything down to what happens in the playoffs.
Here's a question for you. You know, I said 3 and 5, you know, three teams that run the football and five that are passing. I mean, nobody ran the ball at a higher clip than the Baltimore Ravens this year. So, I mean, in reality,
it's 4 and 4.
Is it really not 4 and 4? But last week, with what Joe Flacco was able to do in Pittsburgh.
But go look at their running numbers against Pittsburgh last week as
fantastic.
Well.
Fantastic. So you really could say that, hey, this is a 50-50 deal here.
So in my opinion, and we have gotten the media perception, the NFL has got so infatuated with the quarterback, and it's a quarterback league, and you have to have a quarterback, you have to have this. I agree it's the most important position on the field. If you look at recent history of teams that have won the Super Bowl, it's the best complete team. It's the team that plays good defense. I don't think you can win when it matters the most, which is in the playoffs, without controlling the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And if you look at the teams that have won the Super Bowl, that's what they did. Yes, you have to have a good quarterback. But to say you have
that's
to
going to get you there.
Yeah.
Well, then you got to finish the job
16
somehow.
16 games, that's going to get you there.
But, but to say that's the – you can't win with a guy like Flacco is inaccurate. You could argue in the last 7-8 years.
He's so unique, though.
Most I mean, effective.
It's hard to have a commentary about Joe Flacco because, you know.
Okay, Russell Wilson.
Isn't he an elite quarterback? No, but all of a sudden you look at his numbers when he gets to the playoffs, and he's unbelievable.
Okay, Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell Wilson, for the last 3 years, has, you know, been a quarterback on a team that has been very good, especially in the playoffs. And right now, you probably argue they're the favorite in the to go to the Super Bowl in the NFC.
Absolutely.
And so is Russell Wilson elite?
Mm.
No,
he's
not. No, he's not elite.
He's playing on an elite team.
Okay, that's my point. And so I think when you build a team, if you're trying to say we have to build a team to get the – and, boy, if we don't have an elite quarterback, we can't win. We can't win at all. That's not accurate.
No, but it makes it a lot easier.
It a lot easier, but I would argue that the Dallas Cowboys is a great example. They had Dez Bryant. They had DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, where have they been the last couple of years?
Tony Romo. Okay, that you're making my point.
500.
Guess when they got good this year? When they had a dominant offensive line who can control the line of scrimmage. And so – I believe if you want to build a consistent winner, quarterback is critical. But I don't think you have to have one of the four or five elite guys. You have to have a good quarterback, and you have to have great lines of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Well, more on this coming up. We'll talk about I know you have some other quarterback hatred, Jeff, that you want to throw
call
out there
it
tonight.
Quarterback hatred. But
I think I would. We've discussed this. And you have some issues with some quarterbacks. We'll get to that in the league coming up. More about the Jaguars Senior Bowl prep as well. That's a couple of weeks away. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. More Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Phone lines open, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We'll get some calls coming up. J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli on Jaguars Thursday. Of course, the Jaguars coaching staff will head to Mobile, Alabama, and get ready for the Senior Bowl in a couple of weeks. The staff's off this week, the assistant coaches at least. Gus Bradley's in there, of course, working the phones and interviewing coordinator candidates. But
I'm sure some of the guys on the offensive staff are working the phones too.
Well, that's true, yeah.
I wouldn't blame them.
Yeah.
You know, because if all of a sudden there's an offensive coordinator that comes in and you're out of a job, then you want to get lined up somewhere. So I'm sure that their phones are staying busy as well.
As a staff, though, the plan is to be back next week to start preparation for the Senior Bowl Mobile. The Jaguars have the South team again this year, and that'll come up in a couple weeks. Of course, Jaguars.com will have extensive coverage from Mobile. Brian Sexton, John Osier, Dave DeCandis, and Patrick Cavanaugh will all be there.
Are you heading out there?
No, I won't be there, no. I'll be at the Combine in Indy, though. We'll be having the same type of coverage in Indianapolis in February coming up. Obviously, everybody knows by now that last year's Senior Bowl, when the Jaguar staff
– tremendous form.
I mean, it was unbelievable.
I mean,
not only for the guys that they ended up drafting, but as John Osier mentioned on a show earlier this week, maybe the guys they didn't draft, too. They got an extra look at guys that maybe they didn't like so much all of a sudden.
Well, and I mean, look at what they were able to acquire that participated in that Senior Bowl. Telvin Smith, Brandon Linder, Aaron Colvin, and all three of them are starters. And I'm saying that Aaron Colvin's a starter, whether you classify him as a nickel.
It'll be next year.
Or if you classify him as the starting corner opposite of Demetrius McCray.
Yeah.
He's going to be a starter. So I look forward to watching those guys play. You know, and from talking to Dave on the Dave Caldwell Show,
yes,
which is what it was named tonight,
need to get one of those permanently, by the way.
I had mentioned about watching film of Telvin Smith, and as part of, you know, the packages that we're getting ready to put up on Jaguars.com over the next couple weeks, watching the linebacking core once again and to watch the things that Telvin Smith can do physically is amazing. I mean, it's hard to appreciate it, you know, and it's almost, I think, why Gus and the staff takes time off to detach a little bit, to get away from the day-to-day grind, and to get refreshed, and then to come back in and take almost like a different look at your own football team. Because for me, taking a little bit of time off and then coming back and watching Telvin Smith, I'm watching a film of him, and I was getting ready to do a package, you know, that had some of JT Thomas, some of Geno Hayes, maybe some of a little bit of Paz.
Right.
And I just said to myself after watching all of them, I'm not doing a package on anybody else but Telvin Smith.
He was outstanding the last half of the year. I mean, he was outstanding. And he closed out the season the last four games at a very high level. He, you know, was dominant at times, made plays from the backside that were instinct-based and athletically based, and he did things that you can't do unless you run like he does. You know, early I thought there were some issues with gap control and getting in the right gaps, but as he played more of that will linebacker position, the weak side linebacker, I just thought he got better and better. And what he adds as a every down backer for you, that in nickel, the way he runs,
I just don't see it.
It's very valuable.
JP, you don't even see that out of safeties.
No, he runs
his
better
kind
than,
of mobility.
He runs better than most safeties.
Yeah, I mean, wow. That good.
Yeah,
I'm talking the ability to cover ground like a corner. That's special now. You just don't find that very often. Now, his weight's getting down there around corner range. but, you know, I think if Telvin were to get up, and I had a conversation with Telvin about this on the last Jaguars All Access, because I asked him, I said, what'd you finish the year at? And, you know, he said, you know, 212, somewhere right around in there. And I remember my rookie year when I fell far below what I kind of started the season out, just because, you know, as a rookie, you just don't know what to expect. You know, and
What were your numbers? What'd you start at?
About 245, and then finished up maybe 233.
Okay,
you know,
but I had no problem with that.
No.
I started still at 325, and I was at 325 at the end.
Well, we didn't have training tables, you know, back at that point of you know, in the NFL either. I mean, okay. It was, you know, breakfast. You went to the deli and grabbed a bagel, and for lunch you had.
Did we 95? I don't think we had that.
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
Yeah, we had the chow hall down the way there. We
for
had
some reason I thought we did
breakfast and lunch.
Well, then we always go to. What's that place just down the street?
Well, we did to go to a place close by.
Yeah,
but
I ate more times early away from the stadium. I don't know why. I can't remember why. But
I mean, now with the training tables being, you know, available to guys, I mean, it's
and
really
– the food's really good.
And the food is outstanding.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I mean, sure. Perfect example is today. The steak that I had up there at the chow hall up here was outstanding. Sausages were really good,
yeah.
Too.
Well, yeah. Look at the weight JP put on.
I mean, yeah, my first, I mean, my first 6 months here with the Jaguars, I put on like 20 pounds.
And you still have it?
No, I don't.
But that conversation with Telvin, because I was asking him about his weight, I said, if you could get, you know, to 225, it'd be awesome. And he said, did you feel like you slowed down? Was his question to me. And I didn't. I actually got faster as I went from what was, you know, 233 to 255 from the conclusion of my rookie year to the beginning of my second year, which was a very short period of time because they said you're going to play defensive end. My 40 time went up, and
then went down.
Well, yeah. Well,
you got faster.
Yeah, I got faster. So I think would Telvin lose any of his speed? I don't think so. I mean, to go from what he started the year at 218 to 225. I mean, for Tony, that's a meal. Really, I mean, yeah. That's a meal for Tony.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like my meal in New Orleans over the New Year's.
It's funny we're talking about Telvin because I think back to when Brian Urlacher came through,
yeah.
And talked to all the rookies and all that. And Telvin was one of the most vocal in that room, asking questions and just peppering him with questions. And one of those was about the speed and the weight. You know, how do you keep the weight on Brian's response was, you know, just don't lose the speed. Whatever you do, if you put on weight, make sure you can still run like you can run. And that was the most advice he could give for Telvin.
Well, I mean, if Telvin goes from a 4.42 to a 4.45, I mean, big deal.
Right.
You know, but if he goes from a 4.42 to a 4.75,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have some concerns.
Sure.
But he's not going to do that. You know, if
he's once you lose that speed, it's hard to get it back.
Telvin Smith needs to set up a cot in Thomas Linsky's office in the offseason, and then another cot over at the Chow Hall next to the milkshake machine. It'll be good. 225 is
easy.
Gosh,
I wish someone would tell me to step a cot next to the milkshake machine. I could do that.
Nobody has to tell me that at all.
Gosh, that sounds lovely.
I remember
when I never had to gain weight. Never. No one ever told me to gain weight.
When I was in here, we had a couple guys on the team that actually had body fat percentages that were sub-4. I'm talking sub-4 body fat.
What's a normal body? I don't even know what a normal
I was close to that.
Were you?
I was right on the edge of being one of those guys.
What's a normal percentage? I don't even know.
I think, you know, an average male's probably 18, 20.
Yeah, 12. No, I think 12's like.
No. That's athlete.
That's what I'm talking. Average.
And, yeah, an average athlete.
Like normal JP.
10, 12.
JP, you're probably about 30.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well, we got to look at position groups now. I mean, the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman, you know, are high teens.
Yeah, sure.
You know, mid to high teens.
I was high teens.
Yeah, you were.
No, I was. I was 18.
Broadcasters are probably 20s.
25. No, I guarantee you, you're about 28.
No, come
30.
On.
Yes.
We need to bet on this. How do we do this? How do you even measure it? I don't even know.
Well, there's a couple ways they do it. The water buoyancy is, I think, the only
accurate,
true way to actually get a body fat percentage. But they have these fancy gadgets that they sell that are calipers, and what they do is they basically take a fold of your skin
in
different places of your body, and it takes a measurement of sorts.
Everyone tries to cheat. And
oh, yeah.
And
you know, you're sucking in the, you know, so they can't grab hardly anything. But, I mean, there's guys that we played with that were in that 3-5% body fat range.
Wow.
That the nutritionist basically told him, said, go home and eat a Big Mac every day.
Gosh, that'd be great.
How would you like to do that?
I did it by myself. I mean, if someone told me to do it, I mean, I feel good about myself.
Unbelievable.
Wow. How do you get that low? I mean, you just work out constantly.
No, let me tell you how that. If you're that low, let me tell you how. God smiled on you and made you genetically and gave you the genetic disposition to be like that. We've all seen them. I mean, I played with guys in college, played with guys here, who could eat whatever they want and work out like an hour a day or less, and they'd be just cut up.
Perfect example of that.
I mean, unbelievable.
Perfect example of that, what Tony's talking about. Played with a guy in New York. He was an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
His name was Irv Eatman, and he was an excellent player. Good, solid player.
Irv Eatman. Okay.
Played offensive tackle.
Right tackle.
For the Kansas City Chiefs, right tackle.
Big old guy.
And then we signed him in New York as a free agent. And big guy, like Tony said. I mean, he was one of the rare 300-pound tackles in the game at that time. And Irv tested positive in the NFL testing program constantly. But it wasn't because he was on anything. It's that he had just a crazy, unusually high level of testosterone given to any human being. And he literally in the offseason would not work out. Because if he did, he just got so big. And so what Irv would just do a lot of running to control his weight and size. And then when he got to training camp, I swear to you that he would start working out in the weight room a little bit just to be able to keep the joints healthy and strong for range of motion. But he would always do arms. And he was the only human being that I swear to you that you could literally watch his arms grow on a daily basis. You didn't have to have the fast motion to see his arms grow. You could literally see it happen before your eyes. And his arms would go from, like, what were they, like a 19-inch arm when he got to camp to, like, 22 inches in the course of a month. It was unbelievable. And I was just going, Irv, what are you eating? What are you drinking? Because I want some of that.
Logs tried to blood dope from Irv Eatman's blood.
Transfusion of some kind.
Hook us up,
huh?
Doc. Hook us up.
New system, new routes, new way. The JTA is transformed to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. Their new routes mark the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. When we return, a look at last week's games in the NFL playoffs. Still to come, a look ahead to the divisional round. Some really good quarterback matchups this coming weekend. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Yeah. Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Jags 365 season ticket members, your personalized 2015 season ticket renewal brochure is in your email. The January 16th deadline to renew is right around the corner. Renew now and enter to win amazing prizes such as a Shad Khan suite experience, appearances from Jackson DeVille and The Roar, or Super Bowl tickets. For questions about your account, call 633-2000, select option 1, or visit jaguars.com.
I was
Jaguars Thursday.
During the commercial break here, I was kind of laughing because I went and pulled up some pictures of Irv Eatman to you guys. And I remember on our offensive line at that time, Irv Eatman was the right tackle, and our right guard was Dwayne White. And Dwayne White was the kind of complete opposite of Irv as far as body types go. And very large around the midsection.
Yeah, that's a big
fella. So seeing these two guys line up next to each other was almost comical.
You can definitely point out the guard and the tackle from those two. You know, who's playing inside, who's playing outside.
There's another Tony.
It's a good look.
Good look for Dwayne White there.
Absolutely.
Svelte.
Looking very, like,
just own it, you know.
He almost looked like
Nate Newton.
Kyle Love, you know. He was worse than Nate Newton. I mean,
Dwayne White?
Oh, yeah. Much bigger in the midsection. Didn't have, you know, any size up top in his shoulders. His arms were pencil thin, but his belly was extremely large. One hell of a football player now. No, he had a nickname Road Grader for a reason.
You can get it done with all shapes and sizes.
Last week, of course, you know, this has kind of played out now throughout the week, but let's go back to Dallas. This is the first time we've had a chance to talk about this and the officiating in that Cowboys-Lions game. You know, you can look at it five different ways and see a couple different penalties, some earlier in the game. This happens every week where officials say, yeah, we missed a call here or there, but what did you make of all that, Tony? The interference, non-interference, and the manner in which it happened. They called it and then picked it up.
So, first of all, it should have been holding before anything, especially the way they called it this year. And that was my biggest contention for the entire year. I thought they were very inconsistent on the point of emphasis of illegal contact down the field and holding. Sometimes they'd call it so tight, but then at certain points in the game, you'd see people grabbing and holding on and no call. And so that was very frustrating. I thought that's what they missed. If there would have been no holding on the play, I actually would have been fine either way. But if you're going to throw the flag, call the pass interference. If you're not going to throw the flag, I can get it. Because if you watch the play in slow motion after the hold, there's not a lot of contact. And actually, the first initial contact initiated by, I believe it was Pettigrew a little bit, as the Cowboy defenders running and face guarding him, which is not a penalty.
He did grab his face mask too.
Yeah, and they're kind of pushing. Yeah. There's a little bit of hand fighting there. And I didn't think that Pettigrew stopped and tried to come back through the defender, which would have made it a very easy call. But I also can see I'm fine with pass interference. So I'm fine either way, but throw the flag, have a conviction, and call whatever you throw. But they missed the hold at the beginning of that play, which supposedly was a point of emphasis all year, which I thought was horrendously called throughout the year. So,
I think it was a penalty. I didn't think it should have been thrown. I think they got it right.
Well, there you go.
I mean, a little bit of jersey being pulled away from the
no,
body.
No, but would you agree, Jeff, based on how they were supposed to call it, what we heard from the official, if there's any jersey grab and it's pulled away, what was supposed to be the call?
But it's the playoffs.
I agree. But my point is they were inconsistent all year with
that. So hold on. So why are you calling it different then? If it's the playoffs, if you call it like the regular
season,
it's
the way it is. They called it different the entire year. They let certain guys hold and grab and do all those kinds of things, and certain guys they wouldn't. And why? I have no idea.
Like who? You have names?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. Within just the games the Jaguars played, I mean – late, and I can't remember who we were playing exactly, but two offensive pass interference calls, one on Clay Harbor and one on Cecil Shorts, were awful. There was no push-off where it affected the defender. Maybe some hand-fighting, but that happens every play. And all the time, I can remember back to the it was a preseason game where Vincent Jackson literally shoved Dwayne Gratz at the top of the route, and nothing was called. But later in the game, it's called. And we got some calls. I mean, I remember one play, it was, I believe, Marquise Lee in a game. I can't remember which game. He's run over the middle. It's a late flag, and they call defensive illegal contact. And it was minimal contact. And, in fact, it was Marquise at the top of the route running into the defender and breaking it off, something you see all the time. And so I think they need to go revisit that and determine, really. I think the game's a better game when you let that incidental stuff go and you only call the egregious push-offs or contact or holding.
You know, that the interesting thing is that most teams actually have analytics on the officiating crew.
That's right.
You know, as far as statistical data on what their frequency is in certain calls. And so teams actually go into the games and say, hey, look, this crew here likes to call this. We need to be aware of that, which is kind of crazy, which goes to show you that there are some inconsistencies.
Human element.
Is there enough to make this one call at Dallas and look at that and say, oh, it's all bad? No.
Well, and first of all, the Detroit Lions had a chance to stop the Cowboys. It was 4th and 6. They could have stopped them. And then they still got the ball back with over 2 minutes left and couldn't do anything with it. So, you know, stop crying. It happens every week.
All those analytics on officials are great until they use all-star crews in the postseason.
I don't like that either. I think you should use the best crews in their entirety. The way the NFL does it, they pick the best umpire, the best referee, the best line judge, the best, and they pull them from all different crews. And the first time this crew works together is that game. Pick the best crews.
I don't have a problem with it.
I don't.
I don't. Because, I mean, the way that the officiating is set up, it's not like the crew all functions as an entity. They each have a specific responsibility.
But the communication,
the interchangeable parts. Now, the communication, as we saw in the Dallas game, is not the same as what it is when you've got the same crew. I get that. But give me the best. Give me the best field judge. Give me the best umpire. Give me the best referee. Put them together, because they're all entities that can exist in amongst themselves without others to exist.
But, Jeff, that goes back against what you just said about the analytics of teams being able to look at what crews do and having an idea of how the game's
going
to
be. Well, they break it down by official.
No, but they mainly do it by crews. This crew's coming in, and this is what this crew, how many penalties, what they like to call, and everything else. So keep the consistency. Grade the crews individually and as an entirety, and put them all together and have the best crews officiate the playoff games. The other thing I would do. I wouldn't, because now the crew that worked that game, they graded wherever. Now a better Lions judge and a better umpire are going to work this round. And the better and the better. Just get the best crews, and then I'd grade them in the playoffs. And whoever worked the best that first round, those crews move on to the next.
Like a tournament for them,
and
too.
They go on to the next one, and then the best crew gets to go to the Super Bowl.
Play the music, Joe. Yeah.
It got hard to plan a schedule. Most of these guys have full-time jobs elsewhere.
Well, I guarantee you every one of them would reschedule a day of work to go do a playoff game or the Super Bowl.
I think the NFL officiating is outstanding. I'm not going to sit here and...
Thank you, Joe.
Winner, Tony Boselli, CopyFax Face-Off on Thursday night. How about that? Oh, that's an old Monday.
Yeah, it's a Monday
routine.
Deal,
yeah. There you have it. So, quickly, biggest disappointment from last week of the losing teams, Cardinals,
I'll give you
Steelers,
one.
Bengals, Lions, what stands out to you, Logan?
Yeah, I'm tired of hearing all week about how Andy Dalton didn't have his wide receiver, A.J. Green. He didn't have his tight end, Jermaine Gresham. When you watch Andy Dalton and the way he just cowered at times and just folded in the face of adversity, if I'm Mike Brown, owner, general manager of the Cincinnati Bengals, I'm looking at trying to find another quarterback.
Mm.
Paid him a lot of money already.
They just signed, yeah,
I know they
just,
did.
Ooh.
I know they did. But
I think it's one of those contracts actually friendly to the club. That
when he got pressure,
make a move.
He did not have any ability to create or to make what Dave Caldwell talked about, which is the strength of Blake Bortles, off-schedule plays. He doesn't have that ability.
I think the biggest disappointment for me was not too many star players were out. I'd have liked to see A.J. Green in that game and what happens. I'd have liked to see Le'Veon Bell for the Steelers be able to play against the Baltimore Ravens. I'd like to see Carson Palmer for the Arizona Cardinals back there, and how does that game go? Too many stars out. That's why I'm glad the league got it right, overturned the suspension of Ndamukong Suh, and let him play in the playoffs. You want your stars on the field in the biggest games. from a viewing standpoint, from, you know, just the what's great for the game. Now, it's not going to happen. Guys get hurt. That's not the NFL's fault. But that's just the disappointment. I would have liked to see those stars on the field.
One other disappointment before we go to a break.
Yes, sir.
That football game between the Carolina Panthers
awful.
And the Arizona
Cardinals.
It was
one of the worst football games I've seen.
That was some bad playoff football now.
I have a feeling this week's games won't be some bad football. We'll get to those coming up. We'll pick some of the games in divisional round. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Final segment of Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. Jaguars Thursday, final segment. On Thursday evening, J.P. Shadrick, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Baselli. It's time to look at the NFL playoffs, the divisional round, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, the Ravens go to Foxborough to face the Patriots.
Is that the first game Saturday?
That is, 4:35 Eastern time in New England. And
I'll be
it's going to be cold.
I'll too. Be at that game.
You better dress warm.
Son. And I'll be working the sideline, which I am a little bit nervous about.
What's the coldest game you've been involved in?
Playing? Or
yeah, playing, attending.
Playing was the Cincinnati game in 2000 where the wind chill was, I think, minus 10 or minus 13.
Oof.
That was absolutely miserable.
Ooh. You, Jeff?
Minus 40 in Buffalo.
That's
coldest
cold.
Coldest game in the history of Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, and then coldest I've announced, I did the Denver.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. No, on the field. Sideline. It's worse.
That still doesn't count.
I'd rather be playing.
You can wear clothes.
It doesn't matter. You stand
you're
there.
So soft.
Oh, very soft. Yeah, I used to be way tough.
The guy that didn't wear sleeves, he's talking about
you,
being
you're from
cold
Colorado.
I used to be tough. I'm not tough anymore, Jeff. It was like, it was a Denver-New England game at night.
What is
in the playoffs.
You, man?
And it was so cold. I wanted to. I almost was tempted to go on the sideline in the player area.
I can't believe we're having
this conversation.
In front of the heater.
Stand
in front of the heater, but I thought the NFL security would kick me out.
That's terrible.
Terrible. Right. It is terrible.
All right.
I'm just being honest, being transparent.
To the game, Ravens and the Patriots. Of course, the Patriots are the Patriots, man.
So
and they're at home.
Right? Listen, the Ravens.
We've got to pick a lock game of the week,
yeah,
so one of the games here.
The Patriots never lose at home. Anytime and rarely,
unless they're the Ravens
in the playoffs, almost never in the playoffs. I think Tom Brady's lost one game in the playoffs, and it was to the Baltimore Ravens. And they should have lost the last time they played in New England, which was 2 years ago when the Patriots went to the playoffs. Lee Evans dropped a touchdown with almost no time left to win the game. This is going to be a very close game, and the Ravens will be in it in the fourth quarter. Boy, it's a coin flip to me. I'll probably go with the Patriots just because they're at home, but it would not shock me at all if the Ravens win.
No. Tony's spot on. I'm taking the Patriots. Yeah, I think the Ravens – which Ravens team is going to show up?
The playoff team that always plays well.
Well, I mean, maybe. But, you know, will the team that played in the last couple weeks of the season show up besides the game that they obviously came back and won to get in the playoffs?
They sure didn't last week.
Because they didn't look like the Houston Texans game where they had 211 total yards of offense.
We watched that film. It was awful.
Ugh.
But it's going to be a fabulous football game. Very physical. Both very well coached. Great head coaches. Gary Kubiak's done a great job with that.
And it's a great 4 o'clock game.
I'm outside the cold because the high that day is supposed to be 24 in New England with wind gusts up in the high teens, low 20s.
You think he's been staring at the forecast?
Yes,
I can't believe it.
So I'm not looking forward to that, but I'm actually really excited about being on the sidelines for that game.
Get you some hot packs, okay? Suck it up and get you some of those hot pockets.
I thought you were a tough offensive lineman.
I used to be.
Yeah, used to be.
They also make something called a Thermacell heated insoles. Get you some of them.
Where do I get those?
I got some at the house.
Take it from the deer hunter.
My feet get my feet get cold.
Little Tony. Yeah, exactly. I'll take the Ravens just to be different from you guys. All right, 8:15 Saturday night. The Panthers – go and face lock the 12th the man.
Right, that's the lock of the week.
That's your lock?
Lock.
The Seattle Seahawks,
are going to crush them.
I agree.
Crush lock. Matt?
Crush them.
Didn't Dave not seem to think so?
He said he thought it was going to be closer than what people think. Now, what's the definition? I mean, most people are thinking, you know, 15, 20 points. I just, man, I just don't see from what I saw
Panthers?
Against the Arizona Cardinals and the way Cam Newton is playing that he has any chance
he's
going
up
to Seattle and playing well against that defense. I think they would be very fortunate to score points, period.
Lynch against those linebackers for Carolina?
No, Carolina's defense is great. Luke Kuechly, arguably the best linebacker in football.
Lotulelei is out.
Yep.
That's a big
loss. No, Star Lotulelei, huge. One technique for them, nose guard. So, by the way, I'm with Jeff. Lock of the week.
Lock of the week. Seahawks. No points, of course. Just Seahawks straight
what
up.
What is the spread,
Panthers.
Does it say?
It is 11.
I don't think we're into 20 or more. I don't think I've never gambled on an NFL game ever.
Entertainment purposes.
I have no idea what which side you go on that, but I like.
You like the Seahawks.
If there's a bet you can make, we'll just pick the winning team.
You just did
Yeah, I'd take the Seahawks.
Yeah. Okay, Sunday, the Cowboys, speaking of cold, are in Green Bay against the Packers. And it will be frigid at Lambeau. Great quarterback matchup, of course.
Aaron
Rodgers has a little tear in his calf.
Did not practice yesterday.
No.
I've not heard the report whether he practiced today or not. He says he guarantees he'll play.
He's going to play.
He's going to light him up.
I think the Green Bay Packers are outstanding, and boy, Aaron Rodgers, arguably MVP, probably will win it. Best quarterback in the NFL right now, but he is 2-3. He's lost two of the last three home playoff games in Green Bay. I like the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Dallas Cowboys will run against that defense in that cold weather. DeMarco Murray is going to have a huge day, and I give Rod Marinelli a ton of credit because somehow, some way. With that no-name defense, with nobody that you are scared of, they find a way to stop people when it matters the most. And I like the Dallas Cowboys to pull the upset.
Mr. Mintz has a concussion.
Mm.
Okay, Jeremy Mincy is on the injury report this week. Aaron Rodgers is going to show everybody that we're talking about practice. We're talking about practice. He's
so you're
fine.
I think you're taking the Packers.
Green Bay is going to wear him out. It's going to be kind of a flashback maybe to the Ice Bowl.
1967. That was a negative 48 wind chill that day.
Yummy.
Yeah, great. Okay, so the Packers win that one.
I said the Cowboys.
Well, you said the Cowboys.
Yes.
You got a road team going into Green Bay in the frigid temperatures. All right, Colts at the Broncos. Luck Manning.
By the way, on that game,
yes.
Tony Romo is going to look terrible. Let me throw that out there.
Okay. How about Luck and Manning? Colts, Broncos in Denver.
I don't think this game will be close.
I do.
I think Broncos are going to win this. I don't think that.
You think it's close, Jeff?
I think this is the one game, if I had to pick one game, that I think.
Upset?
Absolutely. This is the one.
Broncos haven't been playing Bronco ball really
think
the last couple weeks
much,
of the season.
Tell me the one good team the Colts beat this year, all year. Just pick one. Give me one.
Cincinnati.
You just told me how bad
they
are.
You were just dogged Andy Dalton a second
ago. They had a good record.
Okay.
Jeez.
They had a good record, right?
He stinks.
They were 9-5-1.
Wow.
So, I mean, they haven't beat anyone. And listen, I'm rooting for the Colts because I've known Chuck Pagano.
Hold on. Can you tape that? He's rooting for the Colts.
In this game.
Okay.
I've known the Pagano family. I played for his dad in high school. I mean, I'm a Chuck Pagano fan. I don't care about the Colts individually. I like Chuck Pagano. Brant Boyer's on that staff. I'd love for them to do it. Be
former
great.
Linebacker, great here in Jaguars history.
But I don't see it happening. I think the Broncos.
Think they're going to blow them out?
No, I don't think it's going to be a boat race, but I think it's a 10 to 14 point game at the end of it.
It's a pretty big spread.
Yeah, I just think that in a game of this magnitude, because, when you're talking about Peyton Manning, and any team that he's with right now, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter who. It's not about winning regular season games. It's about winning Super Bowls. And the pressure is so immense.
Monday night, national championship game, the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Why are we playing NFL music if we're talking college football?
Monday night football.
Monday night football.
Ohio State, Oregon, right. Who you got?
Only
quickly.
Monday night game we got left.
Who you got? Quickly.
Oregon.
Oregon.
I'm rooting for Oregon.
I think Oregon's going to win just the speed, the pace. I mean, they ran a play every 18 seconds against Florida State, and that's with slowing it down the last quarter when they had the big lead.
Marcus Mariota.
There he is. That's it for Jaguars Thursday. For Jeff Flagman, Tony Buscelli, Joe Fortunato, this is JP Shadrick. We'll talk to you next week. It's Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.